Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm back with you here today, back from my trip to India, and I'm so glad to be with all of you. I've missed being on the show, although I hope you enjoyed the shows that I had pre-recorded for all of you. I know they were great. But my trip to India was really life-affirming, and, you know, I say that because it wasn't really life-changing in that I know I was already on a spiritual path, a spiritual journey. And so going there just brought it into greater into my consciousness and made me remember it every moment. And for me, that's the key. You know, Ram Dass's book years ago, or his album, Love, Serve, and Remember, was, you know, one of the turning points in my life. And loving and serving is something that has never really left me. But the remembering part, it's easy to forget on a daily basis, to remember to be appreciative of the grace in one's life and to allow the spirit in. And so love, serve, and remember was a wonderful mantra while I was in India. And I am now back. And, of course, I immediately jumped in. I came back on Thursday, right after my show, and Saturday was the March Against Monsanto, which was a wonderful global event. It was wonderful to be on the website before our event even started and to see what was going on in Australia and in India and all around the globe, already celebrating the March Against Monsanto, and there were hundreds of thousands of people that took to the streets. And it's so ironic that at the same time while all these people are marching against Monsanto, the World Food Prize was awarding the two executives from Monsanto the World Food Prize for helping to feed the world. So obviously they're not listening to the masses, and we need to change that. So on my website there's so many petitions that people can sign to get involved in helping to change change the world and help our food system become more sustainable, and trying to wipe out Monsanto, which I know is a far cry, is something that would be really, really wonderful. So do what you can. Sign petitions as they come through. Right now there's a bill pending in Washington State called I-522, and the Grocery Manufacturers Association has been taking donations from corporations and making huge donations to defeat this bill. And they have not come forth with the corporations that are donating. And there was actually a group, a grassroots group of moms who sued the GMA, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, for hiding disclosure donations, and wanted them to come forth with the companies that were participating. And the judge rejected their suit, and actually the GMA countersued, and these moms were fined $10,000 for requesting the GMA to come forth with the names of the companies. So anyway, there is a petition that you can sign on my website to take action to try to speak out against this injustice. There is also a petition to let Obama know that we do not appreciate Anita Dunn's connections with the TransCanada company. She has been working in the Obama administration, and she has ties to TransCanada and is really pushing to try to get through the Keystone XL pipeline. And that's something, as you know, we've been talking about for years already. I had Bill McKibben on just last week talking about the Keystone pipeline, which is still as much an issue as it was a few years ago, and we need to put an end to that. So speak up against that, and also the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Obama is trying to put through, which is a secret free trade agreement that is going to really give corporations a carte blanche pathway to doing trade without any type of consumer health, safety, labor, or environmental regulations. And so that's a really bad thing. So please speak up against that as well. I was happy to hear that Mexico has banned GMOs and that France has banned fracking. So there's, you know, a lot of good things going on in other countries, and we need to get our country to hear us. And the good food movement's really moving forward, and I'm so happy to be a part of it, and I'm so happy all of you are a part of it. Lots of things coming up also in the New York area and also around the country. Tonight I'm actually teaching a cooking demo at a public library. It's called One Wok, Three Meals, and it's just demonstrating how easy it is to cook delicious fresh food. And one thing that IE Green is really trying to promote is a passion for cooking and trying to encourage people to cook. It became so apparent to me when I was traveling through India. There, people cook. And, you know, I went to some of the finest restaurants in Delhi, and then I went and ate at, you know, a little guest house in the foothills of the Himalayas. And I'm telling you, the food was just as good at that little restaurant or guest house where I paid 100 rupees, which is equivalent to $1.50 for an unbelievable vegetarian Indian meal consisting of dal and chapatis and rice and sabji, a couple different curries. And the same type of meal at the restaurant was equivalent of $30 at a fine restaurant in Delhi. And it was just really incredible to see that the people in India, they don't have a lot, but they put everything they have into what they have. And everybody cooks. And the ingredients, when you see that there's no big supermarket, everything's local and small little stands, and people buy as they need. And the food was just incredible all the way through India. It was wonderful. So I'm really trying to encourage more and more people to cook, because when you cook, you have control over the ingredients of what you're putting into your food. And that's so important. When you eat out, you have no idea of the quality of the ingredients. Actually, sometimes you do know if you really shop around, go to the right restaurant, but that's also very costly. So cooking and purchasing local and seasonal vegetables is really the way to go, and I encourage all of you to do that. This weekend coming up is the Long Island Bee Honeybee Conference, and that takes place at St. John's University, and it's an all-day event from 8 to 5. There's going to be lots of speakers, lots of stuff going on, so I'd love to see some of you coming out to that. And then October 22nd, next Tuesday, the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington, which is our local arts film, is showing the documentary One Track Heart, the story of Krishan Das. And Krishan Das is actually going to join us for this screening. And so that should be really a wonderful event if you can come to that. Island Harvest, which is an organization very dear to my heart, they are having their annual fundraiser the same evening, October 22nd, at the Crest Hollow Country Club. If you are more interested in going to that, there will be lots of really great food. And then October 23rd is the annual gala for the New York Coalition of Healthy School Food. IE Green will be there serving up some Indian food. This year, their theme is A Passport to Wellness, and it's an international celebration of foods from around the world. So there'll be lots and lots of different foods. And I will be preparing some Indian food. And the recipe I'm going to share with you in a moment, my black dal, is one of the items that I'll be making. Also, October 24th is Food Day. National Food Day. We will be celebrating at SUNY Farmingdale. I know SUNY Stony Brook is also having some celebrations, and Long Island University Post is also having some speakers. So you can go to the Food Day website and find out what is going on in your area. But this is a national movement, and you can certainly find something going on in your area. There's things listed all across the country. So go to the foodday.org website and find out about an event in your area. At SUNY Farmingdale, we have all kinds of speakers lined up. I'll be doing a food demo, and that should be really great. Also, that evening, Sustainable Malloy is celebrating Food Day by screening the movie Chasing Ice, and they also offer a full vegan dinner and a discussion following the movie. So you can find out more about that at the Malloy.edu website. We now have our own edible magazine. Edible Long Island has just come out, and they are having a launching party on November 6th from 5:30 to 8 at a restaurant in Melville, Jewel Restaurant in Melville. So go to the Long Island Edible Long Island website, find out more information about that. And that evening also, we are sponsoring our Let's Eat Food on Film series, A Place at the Table, which is Jeff Bridges' new movie about hunger in America. And that will be the same evening. So lots of great things going on. Please come on out, get involved. We'd love to have your participation in many of these events. Okay, so the recipe I'm sharing with you now is my attempt at replicating a dal that I had at Bukhara Indian restaurant in Delhi. That was just unbelievable. The one thing that they did at this restaurant is they cooked it for 18 hours, which I did not have 18 hours to cook it for, but I'm making it again. I'm going to try to cook this next batch for 18 hours, and I'll let you know. But it still was delicious. And, you know, black dal is not something that I've seen much of. I've, you know, done yellow dal, red dal, green dal, but black dal was really a treat. So I purchased 2 cups or a package of black lentils, and you can get them whole or split. I went for the split ones, but you can certainly get the whole ones. You just would have to soak them overnight. The split ones I didn't have to soak overnight. But you want to rinse the lentils really well before you cook them. That's with all beans. You want to just check, make sure there's no rocks in there, and also just rinse them off really well. And you started with 2 cups of black lentils, 8 cups of water, and 2 bay leaves. Then I also had 1 large onion that I chopped, 1/4 cup of olive oil or coconut oil, 4 cups of chopped tomatoes, 1/2 teaspoon of red chili peppers, or if you have fresh jalapeno peppers or chili peppers, you can use those, of course, 1 teaspoon salt, 4 tablespoons tomato paste, 2 tablespoons chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons grated ginger, 2 teaspoons cumin, 2 teaspoons turmeric, 2 teaspoons cardamom, and 1 teaspoon coriander. And then I put in some fresh cilantro, about 2 tablespoons, plus I left some on the side for garnish at the end. So you wash the lentils really well and drain them, and then you put them into a large stock pot with the water and the bay leaves, and bring that to a boil. Then reduce the heat and let it simmer for about 45 minutes, stirring constantly to try to prevent the bottom from sticking. And if you find that you need to add more water, if it starts getting too thick or sticking too much, you can add a little bit more water at a time. And you're looking for it to break down so that it becomes like a really thick black bean soup. It's kind of like the texture that you're going for. And so while that's cooking, you can sauté the onions in a heavy skillet or sauté pan just until translucent. Then add the garlic, the ginger, and the cumin powder and cook for about 5 minutes. Then you're going to add the remaining spices along with the tomato paste, and you're going to cook the tomato paste for a few minutes. Kind of, I call it browning the tomato paste. It just kind of brings out the flavor of the tomato paste. Then add the tomatoes and cook those down for another 5 minutes or so. You can add a cup of water to this and cook it down. You can cover it if you'd like, but you're just going to cook it down so it becomes like a sauce. Then you're going to add that to the lentils. You're going to add the cilantro and the salt and any other spices that you'd like. You can taste it and see if you'd like more cumin flavor. If you want more heat, you can add more pepper. And the cilantro you can add at the end just for the freshness and, as I said, save some to go on top as garnish. You can also put some fresh onions on top for garnish if you'd like. And that's it, but it's really wonderful. I cooked it for about 5 hours. Just let it keep stewing, and it was delicious. You can cook it for longer or shorter, depending on your time. But like I said, the restaurant I had it at in Delhi cooked it for 18 hours. So that's what I'm going for today. And I'll let you know how it is. So now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest today. K.K. Haspel is the owner, along with her husband Ira, of The Farm, which is a biodynamic farm in Southold, New York. And I first was turned on to KK's work by a mutual friend who's studying biodynamics. And as a Waldorf teacher, I've known of biodynamics for years, and it's something that I wanted to incorporate into my garden as well. And so when I found out about KK, I just knew I had to meet her, and I actually went out this summer and met her, and I'm really thrilled to have her on the show today. So KK, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So can you first tell me a little bit about how you got into gardening? Because I know you had a career before gardening, right?
Yes. My husband, Ira, was an architect, and I was actually a builder. So he'd design them, and I'd build them, and we worked together. So we were not farming at that time.
Uh-huh. And when did you change careers and become a farmer?
Well, actually, it sort of came to me. We were just looking for a barn out on the North Fork of Long Island to sort of get away from our business and have a day off and maybe sit in a hammock and read a book.
Mm-hmm.
We looked for a long time, and we never found any barn or piece of property that had the right vibration, so we kept looking, and then one day, about a year after we started looking, real estate agent took us into this piece of property that had been always been a farm. It dated back to the late 1600s and had been abandoned for 3 years. And actually, as soon as I drove onto the property, which had been laying fallow now for 3 years, and it was in January, so if you physically looked at what was there, quite desolate, but I actually had a technicolor vision when I peered over to the right of the property as we drove down the driveway. I literally saw zinnias and sunflowers, and then in the distance, wildflowers, and I was totally captivated by it and this was a spot for me. And luckily, my husband saw there were a lot of barns that we were looking for that were abandoned on the property, and he saw those, and he also had a moment where he knew he had to have it, so We bought the farm, as it were.
Uh-huh.
And from that, I realized that I had to create the vision that I had seen. So I hired a local farmer to come and plow the field where I had first seen the zinnias and the sunflowers. And it was a life-changing experience. As soon as I started farming, I knew I had to find out everything I could about it. And I just so happened to, as these things work out, a little synchronicity, met some people that knew someone that was having, that was going to this organic class called the Nature Lyceum that was the first organic school in the country. And luckily it happened to be held in West Hampton, and I went with a few of my new friends, and that's where I heard about biodynamics, and the journey began. I came home after that class, and I told Ira, we're doing biodynamics. He's like, what is that? I said, I have no idea, but we're going to find out. And that's what I've been trying to do, find out what biodynamics is in the practice, and it's been a wonderful journey, and it's...
Well, can you share with my listeners a little bit about what is biodynamics in, you know, in comparison to organics? People, of course, know about organic farming, and I always think of biodynamics as like taking it a step further. It's, you know, it's the organic of organics.
Right. That's the way I look at it, too. But the difference is that biodynamic is an organic way of farming, but organic farming is a wonderful practice because it doesn't use all the sides. By sides, I mean the pesticides, the herbicides, the fungicides, et cetera. And it treats any so-called, quote, problem in an approved organic way. But it's really dealing in more material inputs, more earthly ways of doing things, more materialistic, which I equate with more like where America is at right now in a very materialistic state. But biodynamics is about trying to bring positive cosmic forces to the soil, to the plant, to yourself, and to the planet. And in this way, we can heal the planet. So you can see it's all about bringing balance, not as opposed to worrying about inputs or counteracting things. Because when things are in balance, everything will be right and the earth can heal itself. It's just like if we're in balance, we're not going to get sick. And it's the same principle.
Mm-hmm. So instead of having different amendments, even if they're organic amendments, you more just approach it more in a holistic way.
In a holistic way, and taking, letting the whole cosmos, the whole universe, which is here to help us, and we're a part of it, to allow ourselves to be open to that which we've been cut off for. So there are some different ways. So you say, how does this happen? How can we start doing this and be aware of that? So one thing we can use is that there's a biodynamic planting and sowing calendar, which I'd like to tell you a little bit about and how we use it. It's a wonderful, because we don't have to necessarily know when we start about all the relationships between the moon and the stars and the earth and how all these things relate to each other, but obviously there is a relationship between everything that's happening, and there are certain times that are more favorable to certain things. And in terms of agriculture, how this can help you in terms of farming or gardening is that the calendar will show you that in these cosmic relationships, there is a relationship that certain times are more favorable for working with root crops, which would be your garlics, your carrots, your onions. There's certain times that are more favorable for leaf, your greens, your spinach, those kind of things. Certain times are more favorable to fruit, and certain times are more favorable to flower. And more importantly, there are times that are unfavorable, that are what we call blackout days. And for example, tomorrow, Friday, there's actually a lunar eclipse happening on Friday at 8 p.m. it starts. So that's actually going to be a 24-hour blackout time that for 12 hours before that time and 12 hours after that time, it's extremely unfavorable, especially to sow seeds. The germination will be very poor, and what does germinate will probably be very weak and therefore very prone to pests and things like that. So if you're trying to grow organically, this is very valuable information to have because you really want to grow everything in the most favorable conditions so that you don't have problems that you have to deal with. So again, mm-hmm. it's just about being back at balance. So if it's balanced for arugula to be planted today, because today is a great leaf day and right before a full moon, I mean, that's the time you should plant it. So the calendar is very helpful in showing you these relationships. Of course, mm-hmm. if you learn more, you can get more information out of the calendar that's also very beneficial. But
is that similar to the Farmer's Almanac, or that the Farmer's Almanac is different than that?
The Farmer's Almanac is different. How the biodynamic planting and sowing calendar is actually based in real time, and it has to do with how the moon goes around the earth, which happens like every 27 and a third days. And as it passes around the earth against the pattern of the fixed stars, you would see all the constellations, and it spends about 2 to 3 days in each of these constellations. And these constellations in turn relate to either a leaf or a fruit or a root or a flower, or they relate to certain constellations or earth, warmth, water, and air and light, you know, however you look at those kind of relationships. And they're all intermingled so that you're repeating this rhythm. And rhythms are very important to be conscious of. Well, in biodynamic practice, you become more aware of your rhythms. The rhythms are always there for us, and unfortunately, in our busy lives today, we've sort of lost touch with a lot of the rhythms that are around that are very basic. I mean, even day and night, which is the most basic rhythm that we probably know, you know, a lot of people are either working at night or doing things that are maybe in the cycle of how they need to be or maybe out of their cycle. So recognizing that is a part of being in balance. Another rhythm that we know are the seasons, and that we need to pay attention to those rhythms. So there's a lot of things that we've lost touch with that are very basic, and there's many more rhythms that nature is very aware of. I mean, it's all about rhythms and balance. And with our intelligence, we've sort of forgotten some of that. I mean, how a turtle knows to come at a full moon on perigee to a certain spot so that a wave can wash them to the highest part of a beach, you know, at a certain time, one night out of the year, without the calendar, is pretty powerful stuff if you really look into what's going on with nature. I mean, nature knows when to come up and when to, you know, let the leaves fall. But we go by a different timetable, and right. we've lost touch with that, and that's really put a lot of our contact with the earth and with farming and agriculture out of balance. So it's very hard now to grow things and reconnect. And that's why I'm very passionate about biodynamics, because that brings that awareness back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you think about, you know, ancient civilizations, they were so much more in tune to those rhythms. That's what they depended on. You know, so many of the miracles of, you know, structures that were built that you just can't imagine, how could they have done it? They knew about these rhythms, and they used the calendar to help them, you know, whether it's a Mayan.
Exactly. You know, they knew exactly, you know, when that moon was going to come through that small aperture, you know.
Exactly.
At the apex. And, you know, unfortunately, we've forgotten all that knowledge that we knew. So it's all there. You know, we mm-hmm. just, you know, biodynamics is not anything new. It's actually rediscovering what's there and then trying to use it in a way that can heal the earth, be sustainable, although I don't like that word, and bring us back to, you know, a very simple, healthy way of being able to heal the earth, heal the soil, heal the plants, and heal ourselves by eating the plants. So it's you know, just a very basic rhythm, very basic cycle.
Mm-hmm. But it's complicated. I mean, it's,
yes,
basic,
it's
but it's complicated because I know I have, you know,
yes,
looked into it, and it's not something you can just pick up lightly. I mean, you know, even trying to get through any of Rudolf Steiner's readings is a whole trip in by itself.
Right,
but,
exactly, and that makes it more difficult. So I'm trying to help people to decipher in a very clear, practical way, how they can go about practicing biodynamics, and then once you start to practice it and you see the results that are coming, it actually opens you up, because one of the most interesting things that Steiner said was when he was asked why people are not more spiritual or more insightful and going toward a higher plane. And he said it's actually a matter of nutrition, which I thought was a very surprising answer. And what's happened is that the food that we grow now really has no nutritional value in it, so it doesn't get us past the earthly plane, and it barely satisfies our basic physical needs.
Right, and think about how many years ago he said that.
Exactly.
It's even worse now. You know, when he said it, you know, it was almost before all the sides were in place, you know? I mean, when he said it, you know, it was just from the depletion of farming without even all the fertilizers and everything.
Well, they were using mineral fertilizers, and it is interesting to see that when the agriculture lectures, the eight lectures that are what biodynamics, quote, is based on. I mean, he didn't know he was founding biodynamic. I mean, I think he did know he was founding biodynamic agriculture, but it certainly wasn't called as such. But the people that came to him in desperation, because at that time, this is going back to 1924, as you indicated, unfortunately, already material fertilizers were being used. And not only the farmers, but all the veterinarians and all the people who had worked connected with the land and were noticing things that we're noticing today, but at a greater rate, that there was a great sterility in a lot of the animals. They were not fertile like they had used to be. It was very tough. The veterinarians were noticing a lot of diseases in all the animals. So they actually came to Steiner as part of the agriculture course, not only plants, but animals at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmers were noticing that seed that had been, and these are farmers that, you know, you realize at that time, I mean, these were generation and generation. I mean, farmers that had
right.
gone back, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years and had you know, passed down father to son, and that they were noticing seed vitality, which usually lasted, you know, 50 years. They stored their seed, and they could still get it, and it would be extremely productive. It was lasting like 3 years. So, I mean, this is, you know, not good times. And certainly mm-hmm. now that, 90 years has passed since then, you know, things have not improved at all. And certainly with Monsanto, things are really going in a bad direction. So...
Mm-hmm.
Biodynamics can restore all that, and that's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about it, because it can restore the fertility. We just need to wake up the soil, the plants, and ourselves, and sensitize us, ourselves and the plants and the soil, to all these wonderful cosmic forces that are out there in the universe to help us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going back with the rhythms, and then also... Steiner indicated these what we now call the biodynamic preparations that are also to be used that help enliven the soil, because we sort of
right.
got
a... I think of the preparations kind of like as homeopathy for the soil. And I really want to get into it, but I don't want to rush it, so I want to take a couple-minute break,
okay.
KK, and then when we come back, I would really love you to share with everybody what some of those preparations are and how do they work to enliven the soil. So don't go anywhere, and everyone out there, please stay with us. We'll be right back in just a few minutes.
Jaya Maria, Maria.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm here with my guest today, K.K. Haspel, the biodynamic farmer and owner of The Farm in South Hold, New York. K.K., are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So before our break, we just were touching on the biodynamic preparations, what they are and how they're used. Can you explain that to everyone?
Yes. These are homeopathic preparations that were given by indications that Steiner gave and were tested and more refined from one of his disciples, Enfield Pfeiffer. And I'd like to go through what some of them are. And these are very easy and available from the Josephine Porter Institute. So I want you to realize before you start, if you are interested in putting these preparations out on your garden or your farm, that you don't have to actually make them, that you can purchase them. They're excellent, excellent quality. And then later on, if you're so interested, you can certainly, it's a wonderful experience to make them yourself.
I have a personal question for you. I've ordered some of those preparations and then just never got around to having the time to stir them for an hour. So I haven't used them. Are they still good or do they go bad?
Over time, and depending how you store them, they can last for a very, very long time. But they should be stored. Well, there's different storage for a lot of them. Did you get the 500 and the what?
Yeah, and the horsetail and the compost preparation.
Okay. The horsetail, if you had it in a dry spot, is probably probably fine.
Mm-hmm.
The 500, if it was stored in a cool, moist environment, ideally not in a bag but in a jar and not near electrical or that kind of stimulation, it's probably still good.
Mm-hmm.
I could douse for you and find out if they're good or not.
Okay. Well, I might see you this Sunday. Oh, actually, I want to share with everybody that you're having a workshop this Sunday, right, at 3 p.m. at your farm?
Yes, that's correct. So I'll be actually doing hands-on, showing you how to put out the preparations, how to make biodynamic compost. So it's a very practical workshop so that you're not confused because reading some of the material can be a little difficult as you first go around, which
yes.
I experienced when I first started to learn about biodynamics. So
and myself as well. Very
right.
Complicated. Uh-huh.
Right. So I try to make it very user-friendly. So the workshop is very easy, and I can show you how to use the calendar, how to use the preps, and you know, you can just go home and do it.
So while we're on that subject, why don't you share with everybody how to get in touch with you or how to register if they are interested? And what is there a fee associated, I'm sure? What is that?
I'm sorry.
And also, what is the fee?
The workshop is free.
It's free?
Yeah. No, I feel it's extremely important to get it out to the greatest number of people possible. So I don't charge anything. It's my gift to the earth, and I hope that everybody, if everybody would just use the biodynamic preps on their property and maybe throw a little over the fence and get a friend to do the mm-hmm. same thing,
uh-huh.
we would take care of a lot of the problems that are in the world. I feel very confident about that. So
have people sign up.
Yeah, please, come. And you'll have a good time. I think it's going to be a beautiful day. And
do they sign up on your website or call you or just come?
They can just come because I don't want to be people being restricted by that. If they want to let me know they're coming or they need any information, directions, or concerns about coming, you know, they're certain to either email me, go on my website, you can email me, or my phone number is on there too, so you can call me. I just
okay,
want to make
so the website is www.kkthefarm.com.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and the phone number, just for everybody, is 631-765-2075, and the farm is in South Hold, North Fork of Long Island. Okay. So
great.
Now to go back to the preparations, yes.
Okay, let me quickly run through what the basic preparations are that that Steiner indicated that are known as, there are lots of preparations out there, but these are the basic preparations, and they've been given numbers, but I will give you both name and number, so that's how they're known as. The first preparation that you want to put out on your farm is what's called BD500, is the horn manure, and this is cow manure, ideally from a biodynamic cow, if possible, or if not an organic cow, that's stuffed very, packed very tightly in a cow horn, and it's buried in the earth over the winter. And believe it or not, the earth is actually the most alive over the winter, and it takes in these energies over the winter, and this cow manure transforms into this beautiful humus. And believe it or not, a quarter of a cup of this horn manure will actually, when potentized, and I'll tell you how that's done, will actually cover an acre of property, which is pretty amazing.
Really?
So a quarter of a cup, yes. And how you potentize it, and I'll be showing you this in more detail on the workshop, is that you just need to put it in sufficient water to cover the acre. Usually what's used is a clean spackle bucket or a bucket of that kind of shape that mm-hmm. not had any chemicals in it, obviously. You're going to fill it up with ideally rainwater, or if not, well water. If the only water that you have access to has chlorine in it, it's best to leave it out in the sun for, say, 48 hours, and the sun will, and that will remove the chlorine and purify the water and also warm it up. I mean, the sun is a good way of energizing the water, even if it's rainwater or if it's well water. And you're going to stir what we call biodynamically to potentize this. For regular corn manure, the stir is 1 hour. You can get potentized horn manure, which is called 500X for the potency, and that stir is only 20 minutes. So a lot of people do like that. And what you do is you're going to stir around the outside of the bucket. And when you stir either with your hand, you can do this, or you can do it with a stick in a comfortable position. And you're going to, by the stirring, you're going to make a vortex. And when you get a good vortex going, just like in life when everything seems to be going good, you're going to stop the stirring, which makes chaos, and you're going to stir going around the outside of the bucket in the opposite direction. Roughly, for those of you that need to know how many times to stir, it's roughly around 20 times makes a good vortex. So you're stirring and unstirring. And you do this for an hour with the regular 500. And you will actually feel the consistency of the water change as you stir. And it seems like a long time. And in the beginning, it seems like a long time, but then you sort of have a transformation. And
it's a good group activity.
Yes.
Is what I found. I did it up at the Pfeiffer Center.
Yes.
You know, where we you know, there was a group of 20 people, so lots of people took many turns, and it was, you know, then it wasn't too overwhelming for anyone.
Right. And it is a good group activity, and then you can all take your buckets back to your property and go spread it out and stop at a few neighbors, because what you can do, since this will do an acre and you need to do the whole prep at one time, is that, say, if you have a quarter of an acre, you can share it with three other friends. And I think the cost of this preparation is maybe $8. So you can actually potentize and start to practice biodynamics for $2 on your property.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see it's not you're not going to be able to go and buy a synthetic fertilizer for that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the effects or the results of this 500? It promotes great root activity. It increases the microbial life, and all the beneficial bacteria will grow very rapidly in your soil. It actually regulates lime and nitrogen content, and it helps to release trace minerals, or trace elements, and it also stimulates the germination of seeds. So
when's the best time to do it, and how often?
Well, certainly when you first start putting out the preparations, you can do it a lot. I mean, I usually, believe it or not, I put out some kind of prep on my property every week or two. But for this kind of prep, the ideal time, now fall is an excellent time. And if you want to, starting next Wednesday would be a great day because we go into a descending moon. So this is all in a descending moon. It puts all the emphasis into the root activity, so it's into the soil, which is where you want this stimulation to happen with this particular preparation. So, and also Wednesday is a root day. So Wednesday, October 23rd, would be an ideal time. This particular preparation should go out after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The reason you put it out after 3 o'clock in the afternoon is that the earth also breathes in and it breathes out, and it breathes in after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So again, with this in-breath, it's taking it into the soil, into itself, and taking it down so it can have the healing effect. So that's why you do it then. You don't have to do it exactly at 3 because the earth doesn't breathe out again till 3 o'clock in the morning. And
mm-hmm.
So you could, you know, do it later in the early evening, whatever works into your schedule. But that would be an ideal time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But my belief is that if you can't do it then, do it any time you can and start getting it out. And that's and I find that that works fine because people have busy schedules, and they have to start using the preparations. And the more they use them, the more they become more conscious and drawn to when they need to use them on their own property. Because everybody's
mm-hmm.
property is its like own individuality. I mean, that's part of biodynamics, is that you believe your farm or your garden is all alive, and it's its own self. So what works on my farm might be different than what works, you know, around the corner at another farm or another garden. So you learn to take that into account and work with those rhythms that work for you. So it's not anything that's set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process.
And then what's the other, then you also have a preparation for compost?
Right. We have a compost prep. We have a couple of other preps first that I just wanted, if I can go in order, and I'll go into the compost prep.
Okay, but we'll have to go quick. We won't be able to go into too much detail because we're going to run out of time.
I didn't realize. Okay, so let me just go through them quickly, and I'll tell you what
okay.
they are. And the compost preps are used to, that's a set of 6 preparations. The first one is yarrow, and that has to do with reproduction and growth. And it permits plants to attract trace elements in extremely dilute quantities for their best nutrition. So it's going to take in all, again, those trace minerals that we're so depleted of. Chamomile also stabilizes nitrogen within the compost and increases soil life. So it stimulates plant growth and aids in reproduction and growth. Nettle tea, that actually stimulates soil health. And it provides plants with an individual nutrition, and it actually enlivens the earth and the soil, which is so necessary. Oak bark provides healing forces or qualities to combat harmful plant diseases. It boosts the immune system, and that's what I've been able to use so successfully to help combat not having the tomato blight. because if the immune system is strong, then the plants won't attract a lot of these pests and problems.
Mm-hmm.
Dandelion, that helps to attract positive cosmic forces to the soil. So this opens the soil up. As we all know, those dandelion root goes very, very deep. And as it goes deep, it allows those forces to come in and transform the soil. And then the last one is valerian, which is an unbelievable preparation. It actually allows phosphorus to be used by the soil, but it allows a warming influence to the compost and to the plants, and it actually can be sprayed individually on plants. Like if we're expecting a frost, but it's only a very mild frost, if you spray out valerian in a dilute situation, and I'm talking like maybe 10 drops to a gallon of water, and you can do most, you can do your whole garden with that, it actually will give you 4 more degrees of protection against frost, which, you know, between 35 and 28 is, you know, it's very huge.
Right.
And there's another preparation, which is called horn silica, and this is ground quartz that's ground very, very fine, and that's also packed into a cow horn, but that's actually buried over the summer months. So it's taking in all the light and the warmth of the universe, and this imparts a tremendous warming influence to the plants and to your garden, and allows the bricks or the sugar content of the plants to rise, and gives you all those complex flavors in your tomatoes and in your grapes, and makes the fruit, you know, so biodynamic fruit is just so delicious, and all of the fruit is. And it allows you to have all these preparations allow the plant to be what it is. So it's going to have more nutrition, and that's been proven, even much more than organic food. It stores better. It tastes better. The colors of the flowers are so much more intense. They last so much longer. And then there's a last preparation that I want to mention, which is horsetail or Equisetum organez, which actually helps with combating fungus. And this you make as a tea, and you can spray out, and it actually tells the fungus, which wants to live in the soil, but under certain conditions it comes up and goes into the plant, that it tells it to go back down into the soil. So this is very good to spray before we have certain conditions like perigee, where the moon is the closest to the earth and the tides and the water in the plants come up, and especially if there's rain at that time, you know, fungus can be very prevalent. So if you spray this out before that, it'll give you protection against that. So these are all ways of combating in a homeopathic way, and drawing on the power of the universe, much more so than just a material bag that you can buy.
Right.
So it's great
well,
stuff.
So exciting. So I'm going to encourage everybody to come out to the farm this Sunday at 3 o'clock and learn firsthand from you. I'm going to be there.
Great.
And I thank you so much. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I have so many more questions. I didn't even get through all these questions.
I know.
But I thank you so much, KK, and everybody out there for listening. I thank you for joining us. It's wonderful to be back, and have a wonderful, blessed week. Thanks, KK.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.